Jambo.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
So sit back as we groove, giving you the reviews, so you only spend time on the documents, the documentaries, the current events, the books, anything that you can get from any particular screen of any kind that you need to. We waste our brain power, our time, our energy, so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us on www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes or Google Play Music or Stitcher. Be sure to head to all of those places, give us a review, and then turn around and be sure to head to www.PacSync.org to show some love and support for our sponsors. PacSync is a black activist and advocacy organization focused on developing the black community through a shift in culture, education, and economics. And as always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the black community. So the things we talk about will be looked at with the racial component involved and with some lessons that could be used to improve the community, should you so desire. This week on Lessons from the Screen, we will be talking about the 2018 State of the Union Address given by Donald Trump after his first year in office as the president. We will be breaking down what was said and what wasn't said as it concerns black people. And we will also be addressing any takeaways and, in general, just covering any relevant points to our community. On this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we cover the State of the Union. So the way we're going to do this, since we've never done a speech before, I'm going to outline how we're going to do this. And the way we're going to do this is basically I'm going to go through some of the claims, not all of the claims, but some of the claims that I think are important for black people. And then I'm going to give my opinion on the claim. And we're just going to do that as we roll through the speech. Now, I'm not going to address every claim. And I'm not even going to address every claim that I think is significant for black people, because we want to keep the show to around that 20-25 minute mark. But I am going to address some of the claims that I feel are important to black people. So when we look at the numbers, the very first thing that we see is his claim of 200,000 new jobs created in America, new manufacturing jobs, and 2 million new jobs, period. Now, the reason this is important is because you're going to continue to see this, and it's probably going to be emphasized more now. You're going to continue to see this thrown up whenever black people talk about unemployment numbers or about our inability to get out of poverty or provide for our families, things like that, to repair our communities. They're already doing it, but now look for it to be an increased tick of them saying, well, there are 200,000 new manufacturing jobs that you could get. Are there 2 million new jobs in the economy you could get, without digging deeper into the numbers and talking about whether these are high skill tech positions or all of the other positions that lead into other avenues of education and indeed needing to not be in poverty to even have access to those things. So that is significant. And the other part of this whole thing, all of these economic numbers that are significant, is that all of these numbers started increasing under President Obama. And we know that the way history is whitewashed, and let me say this, we know that all presidents either take credit for or pass blame to the previous administration, whether or not it's due. But we also know that the way history is shaped, the person that takes claims for something most recently is usually the person that gets credited with those claims. Even Bill Clinton took credit for the economic boom he presided over that was actually started because of some of the actions of Bush Sr. and that Congress that he had working with him. So if they did it to Bush Sr., then you can only imagine how ready they are to forget about the things that Barack Obama has done. And this, again, is important because with the whitewashing of history, they strengthened their historic economic power and their historic standing, period, culturally, and they diminish ours. And it continues a system that has us not feeling proud of who we are and feeling like we haven't accomplished anything. So however you feel about Obama, it is significant that the good things that he did remain his. Now, moving forward, the next claim is rising wages after decades of stagnation. And this one actually falls largely in line with the last points that I just mentioned about it being started under Obama. And wages have actually been on the rise since 1996. Generally speaking, they've been on an upward trend. They just haven't kept up with inflation. And that still holds largely true, even in these modern times. But the most recent upward tick actually began under Obama. And if we want to dig deeper into it, the fourth quarter, Trump's fourth quarter of his first year actually wiped out all the gains that he made in the first three quarters. So, you know, that's another thing that I think it goes back to what I mentioned before about needing to protect the accomplishments of a black president and about these types of numbers being thrown in our faces to minimize or invalidate our claims about having to face social, racial, and institutional barriers to our success and our ability to climb out of the situation that we find ourselves in. Now, this is a significant one as well, and it falls into that same bracket, but the unemployment claims have hit a 45-year low, and black unemployment is the lowest ever recorded. Now, there are a few things we need to understand about these unemployment numbers, because I do hear us relying on them a lot. Unemployment nowadays only tracks the people that are actually making unemployment claims, which doesn't count all of the people that are unemployed. And even deeper, he is only talking about the labor and statistics, the Bureau of Labor and Statistics website, which the information only goes back to about 1972. Now, in 1930, black unemployment was at 5%, which is lower than the current 6.7, 6.8% that it's at now. And there are various other informational points and institutions, organizations that track data back further than 1972. So that is significant as well, in that A, is not true. And B, it nowadays, it doesn't even address the fact that very many people who are unemployed are not filing a claim and may or may not be officially looking for work, which means those people are largely invisible to the economy and this unemployment claim. That is significant, because these types of claims can lull us into a false sense of security, a false sense of survival, a false sense of being somewhere that we are really not. And it is a great way of ignoring the plight of a significant portion of our community and the plight of our economics as a community as a whole. So that is definitely something we have to pay attention to and not get caught up in these numbers and things of that nature. And again, unemployment numbers do not tell the story of those people who are unemployed, which are underemployed, which underemployment is a major, major issue within the black community. When you look at our educational attainment statistics and compare them with our income rates and the jobs we have, they do not match up. And I'm not a fan of comparing us to other communities, but in some senses, it does give us a reference point for what the value of these degrees and things are. And our numbers aren't matching up. They aren't comparing very well, but even if they were, they would still not be significant for me. And that's a larger metric that I think we need to take into consideration. Are the numbers good enough for us? Not how they compare to other people. Are they good enough for us? And if the answer is no, we could be doing the best of anybody in the world. But if they aren't good enough for us, then we need to work to improve those numbers. Unemployment, employment, underemployment, overemployment, wages, educational attainment, all of these things, we need to evaluate them on how good, how do we feel about these numbers, not how do these numbers stack up against other people. So moving on, he went into the biggest tax cuts in history, which is not true. It's just, that's a total lie. And this is interesting because President Obama presided over two larger tax cuts, one in 2010 and one in 2013. with the one in 2013 being the largest one in history when using inflation adjustments, and the one in 2010 being second. Now, there are caveats to those numbers, but still, the numbers are the numbers. There isn't much you can say about that. Now, moving forward, another significant portion of this thing was him talking about the various different props that he brought. I'm sorry, not props. The various different people that he brought to utilize their life story to make some sort of point about how successful he was and to urge people to do more of the things that he wanted them to do. And one of the things that I thought was interesting was that the only black people he had was Corey Adams, the black employee, and the mothers of the parents of the two girls who were killed in New York, which is Nisa Mickens and Kayla Cuevas, who the two girls in 2016, they were killed in 2016. In March of 2017, the police arrested more than a dozen MS-13 members, gang members, in connection with the crime. Now, it is believed that Kayla had been marked for death because of some beef she had with over social media with a gang member, and Nisa was just with her, wrong place, wrong time. Now, that is a sad story, a horrible story, and it definitely shows us that we have to be careful what we say and what we do, even on the internet, because everybody on the internet is not necessarily in a proper state of being for interacting with other people, especially when they're emboldened by their perceived security and anonymity over the internet. So that's something we have to be concerned with. But going back to what I was mentioning before, Corey Adams, the black employee, and these parents, who I believe two of them were Hispanic, or actually and two of them were black, but they all looked black on the screen. So for a lot of people, looking black, whether you're Hispanic or otherwise, means you're black. So we're gonna say these were the only people that were showcased. A black employee out of all of the black business owners that have done very well, that have done a lot for the community, and grieving parents whose children were not killed by the police, as we have numerous cases of that he could have pulled from, but whose parents were killed by an immigrant gang or a Hispanic gang that has a lot of immigrant members. That is a powerful message. That is a powerful message that we all definitely need to pay attention to. Definitely need to pay attention to. Because before he even looked at Corey Adams, the black employee, he gave credit to Corey Adams' boss, who was also there and also being recognized. So it's almost like, come on, let's bring the token nigga over so we can raise his hand too, so that all of the blacks will feel good about, you know, I'm giving tribute to the blacks, to the can we say niggers, the people formerly of the shithole countries. So that is significant. And then I'm giving tribute to the black and the Hispano little girls that were killed by those violent immigrants, that they belong to the same community as. And yeah, look, that was extremely powerful. There are a bunch of different ways we could take that. We could dig very deeply into that. But again, in the interest of keeping the show short, I'm going to stop right there. I definitely believe that you guys are smart enough to be able to pick up the context clues and the subtle hints available in that moment and in those selections. And if you think I'm stretching, hey, leave a comment and let me know. Hey, Pat, man, you're stretching on that one. And that's cool, too. So he talked about the new American moment. And this was interesting because he painted a picture of success, of economic thriving, jobs abounding, people, upward mobility, and all these other things. But I wanted to, you know, like for me, it's very clear when I listen to the State of the Union address who he's talking to. And he's not talking to me or any other people of color, but he's definitely not talking to me as a black person, because there is no new American moment for us. We're still living in the exact same paradigm. We're living in a paradigm of police brutality, murders, racism, obstacles, barriers to achievement. None of those things have changed significantly for us. As a matter of fact, There has been an increase in hate crime since President Obama was elected. And a lot of people can blame that on Obama, and that's fine. That's your prerogative. But I will say, Obama didn't stoke the flames of racism and hatred and divide the nation by anything he said. He stoked those flames and exacerbated those divides, if you will, because he was black. Those divides were already there. They couldn't stand to see a black person in charge. So in that, things got worse from the lullaby they were when we had George Bush, or when we had Bill Clinton, or when we had Bush Sr., or when we had Reagan. Things got worse because they felt under attack because there was a black man sitting in the White House. So when you talk about these new American moments, look, if we want to say we had a new American moment, it started with the election of Obama, and the moment the American dream became even more of a nightmare for us. So I thought that was an interesting point, not necessarily an important point, but definitely an interesting point. And there are a lot of these points scattered throughout the speech where you can make a lot of insertions, a lot of assertions, a lot of inferences and things of that nature. Even when he talks about Americans deserve a country that shows the same level of love and loyalty that they show it. This has been something that black people, pro-black people, have been saying since the beginning. Black people show far too much love, loyalty, and respect to the American nation to be treated the way we are. So it was nice to hear him say that, but you do get the distinct impression that he is, again, not talking to or about black people. He's talking to and about the white supremacists. And that has been echoed all over the place. Even when you look at his non-statements towards the crimes that white supremacists have committed, his non-statements towards the Charlottesville incident where he refused to condemn them until media pressure was put on him. And then the only condemnation he would give was a collective condemnation for all parties involved. The endorsements by various people that are affiliated with white supremacist groups. Even if you look at the amount of people he's appointed to various positions in his government that have since resigned, had to resign, stepped down, or refused the appointments because of racist things that they have said that have come to light. I mean, come on. Come on. This guy, you've got to. He's not talking about us when he talks about the great American dream, the American loyalty, the this, that, and the third. I can assure you that is not what he's talking about. Even when he talks about his historic action to protect religious liberty, and he did sign an executive order giving many religious organizations and individuals more freedoms to express without fear of reproach. But the biggest commitment here is, thanks to all those points I just mentioned, his commitment to white supremacy. And white supremacy can be viewed as a religion. A religion is anything that you feel tied to, that you feel connected to on a deeper level. And granted, the definition goes in a lot of different directions. But for the sake of this show, for the sake of this topic, we're talking about things that people believe deeply. And these people believe deeply that white people are better than black people. And they believe they have a heaven's mandate, a mandate to rule over black people, to rule over people of color, to have a position of power over people of color, to have a position of respect and authority. And that religious doctrine of white supremacy is also being protected here in this America by this president, Donald Trump. So that is definitely something that has to be looked at and paid attention to. Now, his appointment to federal court judges, he has appointed 12 new lifetime circuit court judges. And this is, in fact, the most of any president in the history of our nation. And this is significant because, like I said, these are lifetime appointments. And for many people, these judges in these courtrooms are the Supreme Court. They are going to be the last word. And he's filling them up with people that have ideologies that agree with his. Now, if you think that the Justice Department is not giving us a fair shake now, wait until the Justice Department that is shaped by Donald really begins to take effect. This is going to have a monumental effect on our community. And this is something that we definitely need to be paying attention to and preparing for. Now, when he talks about the VA firing people, and he actually mentioned firing staff members and rewarding those who do well, it is important to mention that most of the people in positions of power in the government are white people. However, black people are overrepresented in the government and federal employee work. 20% of our community works for the federal government. And that is significant, because most of those people are grunt workers. They are not in positions of power. They're not in positions to determine who has merits to get a reward or a bonus and who should be fired, which means that puts us all, that puts a extremely large portion of our community at risk. And you should be wary whenever people start talking about laying off government workers, because that is indirectly saying, whether they know it or not, raise black unemployment, fire more of these niggas. And that is something that needs to be understood by the community. And it is also important because government workers didn't largely begin to be seen as lazy and incompetent until the federal government started hiring black people, until the federal government started allowing black people to work for it. So that is also something that's significant, and it's been something that the federal government has been dealing with larger and increasing amounts as that belief spreads since that occurred. And it is definitely something that needs to be looked at, just like when he talks about eliminating more regulations. Regulations, however we feel about them, they do tend to protect black people and impoverished people, and they protect black people because they protect communities of color and they protect impoverished people. And however you want to feel about it, a large portion of our community is impoverished, 25%. And I know the majority of us are not living in poverty, but when 30% of us are living in poverty or near poverty, that is significant. And that is not something that needs to be swept under the rug, because 60% or 70% of us are not. We need to look back and say, we are only as strong as our weakest link. And our weakest link right now is living in poverty. Let's accept that. Let's stop fighting against it. And let's do something about it. That doesn't mean we have to let other people talk trash about us, but that does mean that we need to step up and do something about it. Now, I want to move forward. He did at this point talk about prison reform to help ex-cons get back on their feet. That's something that we just don't have a lot of information on. And it could be something that's actually positive, because you want to give the guy a fair shake, even though he is a white supremacist. That doesn't mean he can't do certain things that inadvertently benefit us. And I'm sure this is one of those things, depending on how it's worked out, it could also be one of those things that shits on us hard. So those are things that definitely need to be looked at. Now, the reason why his immigration points are significant, and not all four of them, because the Dreamer issue is largely a Hispanic issue, and we do support our Hispanic brothers and sisters, definitely, but this show is about the black community. So the wall and the ICE agents and all of that, that's all horrible. I will stand on the front lines and definitely agree with anybody. That's all horrible for our Hispanic brothers and sisters, and it's not fair. Because there was no immigration policy when white people largely came over. They were able to just come over and start doing whatever they wanted to do. They didn't have to deal with any of this, which is why it's so BS when they all say my great-great-great-great-grandparents came over to this country with nothing. Yeah, well, they were also dealing with a different system that wasn't trying to lock them up and send them back home. So that is a significant point. But with these four pillars, one of the things that I did want to hit on is he constantly talked about ending the visa lottery. Now, the visa lottery is a lottery system that accounts for 50,000 new immigrants every year. Now, that is only about 5% of the total new immigrants coming into America. So let's be clear, it's not a large portion, but 20,000 of those allotments of that 50,000 number is allotted to come from Africa. And this is where you get back to him talking about shithole countries. Now, you're talking about eliminating a program that only admits 5% of the total amount of immigrants in this nation, but 20,000 of those people, nearly half of that allotment, is designed to come from Africa. And these are people that have to meet certain educational requirements and certain work requirements. So it's not like anybody can apply and get in. Now, this is significant because, again, when you go back to his shithole comment, he is trying to take action on not getting immigrants from these quote unquote shithole countries, shit house countries, shit something countries. The countries are shitty. They're shitty, okay? And he's trying to stop immigrants from coming in from there. So to add to that, he's also trying to end chain migration. And he claims he's trying to protect the nuclear family, and we can get into a whole show on that alone. But what ending chain migration would do is he only wants to allow in spouses and children. And what that would do is basically once you get into the country, the way it's set up now, you can sponsor your parents, your brothers and sisters, and your children, and maybe aunties and uncles and various other relatives, depending on certain circumstances. It's not like you can just let anybody in. But he wants to make it so that you can only admit your spouse and your children. And that is going to have a potentially devastating effect on growing black immigrant communities from Africa, from Haiti, from the Caribbean, from any place that he deems these shithole countries, because they have a nuclear family that is a little bit wider. It's not based on just my spouse and my children. It's also based on my parents, my brothers and sisters, my cousins, my uncles, my blah, blah, blah. So that is significant in and of itself when you go back to him wanting to get people away from stop bringing in people from these shithole countries. Now, he did talk about increasing our nuclear arsenal, which is dangerous. And he also talked about the opioid addictions, saying that this was the worst ever addiction in America. And it's not historically. There have been worse addictions, worse addiction crises. But he called for the tougher treatment on drug dealers and drug pushers. And this is significant because it signals an uptick in the war on drugs. For those who said the war on drugs ended under Obama, it just restarted under Trump. And we haven't seen that sort of rhetoric since the Bill Clinton era. And that is significant. That is significant. Well, actually, we saw it in the George Bush era, too. So let me correct myself on that. But it is still significant. And he actually admitted to the war potentially going to be a long struggle. That is a dog whistle for law enforcement agencies and for white people and for people everywhere. That is a whistle. And there have been lots of whistles here, but that was a blatant and obvious whistle that we should definitely be paying attention to. And we could do a whole show on that in and of again. The other point that I wanted to mention was that he talked about terrorists being unlawful enemy combatants and needing to be treated as such. Now, for this, we go back to the BIE report, the Black Identity Extremists, where I talked about the fact that, and you should definitely go check out that show if you haven't, where I talked about the fact that the only difference between a terrorist and an extremist was that an extremist was somebody that they label as being homegrown right here in America. But even with this, if you listen to certain points of his speech, he is in certain points of his activities. He feels that a terrorist is not based on where they're homegrown, but it's based on their activities. And there is no difference in terms of activities between an extremist and a terrorist. So when this comes out of his mouth, he's basically saying extremists and terrorists are unlawful enemy combatants that should be dealt with as such. You go back to this BIE report where he labeled all black people, where the administration, the FBI, labeled, and it's interesting, the FBI is not at war with them, but that's another point. The FBI labeled all black people that identify as being pro-black or having black pride as being a potential black identity extremist. And he has just openly declared war on pro-black people. Now, not just pro-black people, but this show is about black people. So that is there, and that is definitely something that should be paid attention to. Now, you can say I'm stretching, and if you feel like I'm stretching, drop a comment. Let me know how you feel. We could talk about it. So those were the points that were, I felt, definitely important to black people that we needed to pay attention to. There are a lot of other ones in there, but those are the ones that I felt were extremely significant, and some of the other ones that I felt were just important enough or interesting enough to bring up. But here's the thing. What was not mentioned in this thing was anything of substance about black people or anything that directly mentions black people outside of the statistic on black unemployment. There was no mention of police violence. There was no mention of a rise in hate crime. There was no mention of criminal activity, white supremacists in Charlottesville or anything like that. There was no mention of the discriminatory practices by Wells Fargo that have come to light over the last year. There was no mention of the vast racial issues that have swept our nation in the past year. He didn't even mention the sexual harassment issues that have been taken over the nation in the past year. And that's probably because a lot of it surrounds him. And this effectively means that black people have fully fallen into a position of third class status in America, amongst other things. And I spoke about this during one of my Few Minutes with Pat series shows that I was doing on YouTube that you can still find because they're still up. It's roughly 100 of them. But it essentially means that all the leverage you have to force issues, even superficially, that are present when you are the second population source, once you become the third population source, your abilities are nil unless you have a great economic power. And we don't have a great economic power. So that is why we're beginning to see Hispanic culture in all of the movies, television shows, commercials, so on and so forth. And that's not a shot towards Hispanics, but that is a wake-up call for black people. We are becoming invisible. No, we're not becoming. We are invisible. And we are now experiencing America through the lenses of through three lenses, the white lens, the Hispanic lens, and the black lens. And more than ever, we need to be focusing on building ourselves up right now because there are several huge problems with being invisible. One of the problems is nobody cares about your treatment. Nobody cares about what's happening to you. And if we truly feel like we can get other people to care about our plights and use public sentiment and public support to our advantage, that is not going to happen when you are invisible. And we could do a whole show on the dangers of being invisible. But one of the benefits of being invisible is that you are in a position to take advantage of your invisibility, to build things for yourself, to create things for yourself without people watching. But we're not in a position to do even that because we haven't taken the steps to build our culture, to build the sense of self-pride in ourselves that is completely independent of the view that white people have of us. Those are things that we need to repair. So I know this show is getting long, but there's a lot to discuss here. There is a lot that could be added to. There are a lot of points here that we can make a whole show out of. But the State of the Union address is definitely something you need to watch. You never want to give up the opportunity to gain new information, new perspective, especially from those in the positions of power. And it is just as important to read between the lines and hear what they say and hear what they don't say as it is to study up on our own situations. So with that, thank you for watching. Definitely tell me what you think. Drop us a line. Hit us up on Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, or the website www.freedomtrain.com. And I will see you guys next week for another episode of Lessons from the Screen.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review. So you only spend time on the docs that you need to.